It's Monday, January 19th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, dear Stashers, and welcome to the beginning of another week and the end of the Bush administration. That's right, today is the last 24 hours of George W. Bush and Company. And unfortunately, in a parting shot, George W. Bush has delivered clemency to a couple of border agents who shot an unarmed man. We'll be discussing that in our hemp headlines coming up here in just a moment. Also, today is the day we take a look at political activism, so we'll be going to Montana to speak with Tom Dobert from Montana Patients and Families United, who's trying to rally activists to get involved to stop a terrible bill that's coming through the Montana legislature that would affect the driving rights of medical marijuana patients. In our second interview segment, I'm going to be giving you an essay I've written called Cannabis Civil Rights that I have dedicated to today's celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday, reminding you that the fight that we engage in here for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is no less serious a fight than any other civil rights fights in this country. Plus, it's Blues Monday, so for our musical break today, I'm going to bring you some great old blues from Chicago blues man Billy Boy Arnold. It's all that and more coming up here in your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. Bush commutes former Border Patrol agents' prison terms. From the Los Angeles Times. The Justice Department announced that Bush has granted clemency to former Texas-based Border Patrol agents Jose Alonso Compion and Ignacio Nacho Ramos. As is usually the case in such executive grants, the announcement included no explanation, and the White House did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Compion and Ramos were convicted of shooting admitted drug smuggler Osvaldo Aldrete Davila in the buttocks as he fled a van full of marijuana. They argued at trial that they thought Davila was armed and they shot in self-defense, but the prosecutor said no evidence linked the van to Davila and that the agents didn't report the shooting and tampered with evidence by picking up several spent shell casings. They were fired after their convictions, and all charges but obstruction of justice were upheld on appeal. Bush could have pardoned Compion and Ramos, which essentially would have wiped away their underlying convictions. Instead, he chose to commute their prison terms, which keeps their underlying convictions intact. Even so, one former Justice Department official, who spoke on the condition of anonymity given the sensitivity of criticizing the president, decried the commutations today. Quote, "These men were totally unrepentant. There was obstruction of justice. They shot a man in the back. I am speechless. These are terrible clemency cases," end quote, he said. The commutations come on Bush's last full day in office. So let's see if I got this straight. If you're a cop and you shoot an unarmed fleeing man in the back, and then you don't report it, and then you try to cover up the crime, you get a get-out-of-jail-free card, because the man did run away from a van full of marijuana. Besides, the man was a Mexican crossing the border, so he deserved to die, right? But if you're a citizen and police burst into your house at night, unannounced, in a bad neighborhood, serving a warrant on the wrong address, and you fire in self-defense, killing an armed but unidentified police officer who was coming for you and your infant daughter, it's life without the possibility of parole for you because the cops were looking for a house next door that was full of marijuana. Need I mention the citizen is black? In his last day in office, George W. Bush has proven once again his compassion for those in power who break the laws that suit his political agenda. Out a CIA agent in time of war or shoot an unarmed drug smuggler in the back and you get a commutation of sentence. Spy on Americans without warrants and go to war on faulty intelligence and you get a Medal of Freedom. Let an entire city drown and you've done a heck of a job. By these measures of success, I'm expecting Bush to nominate John Walters for sainthood any time now. Representative Beto O'Rourke, 70% now back drug legalization resolution. El Paso, Texas. Representative Beto O'Rourke has been in the hot seat since he successfully lobbied the rest of the city council to approve a resolution that included an amendment that asked for an open and honest debate on the legalization of narcotics. The resolution by the Border Relations Committee called for federal intervention to quell the crime wave in Juarez that claimed 1,600 lives in 2008. O'Rourke added the part of a debate on legalizing narcotics. The rest of the council agreed with him, but Mayor John Cook vetoed it. After making national headlines, being on the losing end of a veto, and taking on a congressman, O'Rourke discussed the interesting week and a half he has had. O'Rourke says, quote, "Right off the bat, most of my correspondence was split 50-50, pro and con. Later on, I got more 70% pro and 30% con. Somebody at my Monday morning breakfast meeting said that when they first read the headline, he wondered what I and the rest of the city council were doing, but that then, the more he thought about it, the more he realized that we were right, that all options needed to be on the table. We asked if he really believed that El Paso would have lost federal and state funds if the veto had been reversed, and O'Rourke answered, quote, "The honest answer is I don't know, and part of why I don't know is because the congressman, U.S. Representative Sylvester Reyes, and his office and the State House delegation offered no specifics or facts. In fact, what they did offer was speculative. It's speculation. There is no specific threat, no specific dollar amount, or no specific project that is in peril," end quote. The American people are ready to talk about legalization. Every call for issues to discuss through change.gov and change.org has seen marijuana law reform rise to the top of the list, over concerns with the economy, foreign policy, the environment, and war. It is not because marijuana law reform is more important than those issues. It is because those issues are at least allowed to be talked about. Americans recognize the fundamental unfairness and un-Americanness of silencing any discussion on this issue. Americans have recognized that not only has the war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs failed to stop any American who wants to use drugs from doing so, but also that it has wasted billions of dollars, ruined millions of lives, and created the unintended harmful consequences resulting in the erosion of our 1st, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 10th, and 14th Amendment rights, America as the world's largest prison state, and the creation of needless violence and despair. Random teacher drug tests in North Carolina. Robbinsville, North Carolina. Teachers in this small rural town school district are awaiting a state appeals court ruling to see whether they'll be required to submit to random tests for drugs and alcohol. Graham County, North Carolina, which has fewer than 1,200 students, is one of a small group of school districts in the nation attempting to establish random drug tests of teachers and other employees. The district would be among the, quote, very, very few, end quote, to randomly test teachers, says American Civil Liberties Union staff attorney Adam Wolf. Michael Simpson, assistant general counsel with the National Education Association, says, quote, it would be, in our view, a waste of money because there is no problem that a drug testing program can address, end quote. In North Carolina, a lawsuit by the State Teachers Association prevented a 2007 start for random drug testing in Graham County schools. Former County School Board Chairman Mitch Colvard says he saw a worsening local drug problem in his job as a paramedic. He pushed for the policy in 2006. Colvard says, quote, I think when I put my kids in their hands, they lose their rights. My rights are more important, end quote. Mr. Colvard, what right of yours is it that we're protecting with random teacher drug testing? Your right to invade the bodily integrity of your children's instructor? First of all, you must acknowledge that random urine screening is not an exact science. There are medications and conditions that can create a false positive test. There are adulterants and supplements that can create a false negative test. Most drug screening doesn't bother to detect those who abuse alcohol. Most of all, urine screening disproportionately detects those who use cannabis over those who use meth, cocaine, heroin, and hallucinogens, as those substances flush out of the system within a couple days. So, if your goal is to ensure your children are never in a classroom with a drug-addled teacher, then random drug testing is not a good method to achieve that goal. The tests wouldn't catch a drunk teacher or a teacher stoned on Vicodin, and those teachers who would fail for meth, cocaine, heroin, or hallucinogens should be so easily detected by observation that a test is unnecessary. Truly, the random drug test exists solely to catch marijuana smokers, because without it, there is no obvious signs of marijuana use to detect. So if the problem, then, is teachers who use marijuana teaching your children, but in practice you can't determine their past marijuana use by simple observation, what exactly is it that you're intending to protect your children from? What harm from marijuana is going to befall your children when the harm from marijuana to the instructor is so slight you have to confiscate his urine to even determine if he uses marijuana? Here's an idea. Why don't you take the money you were going to spend on getting hard-working, underpaid teachers to pee in a cup and spend it on instead, up-to-date history books, pencils, globes, microscopes, paper, maybe some teaching assistants? Unless you think your kids are more interested in the metabolites in the teacher's pee than the lessons in the teacher's head.
Stupid Stoner Stories.
As a public service, Normal reminds you that smoking marijuana will not make one stupid. However, some stupid people do smoke marijuana. Don't be one of those stoners that make the rest of us look bad. Learn your lesson from today's
Stupid Stoner Story.
Ann Arbor teen kills bunny, assaults girlfriend over smashed bongs.
An Ann Arbor teen who bludgeoned his girlfriend's pet rabbit with a baseball bat during an argument will likely be arraigned on animal cruelty charges later today, city police said. Officers responded to an assault call in the 200 block of Brookridge Road at about 10:15 p.m. Sunday and encountered encountered a 17-year-old girl with split lip and bite marks on her fingers. The girl told police she confronted her 17-year-old boyfriend, who had been living with her and her mother for about a month, about his marijuana use and used a baseball bat to smash two bongs in his bedroom. He lunged at her, and the pair briefly struggled over the bat until he bit her hand, breaking the skin. The rabbit's cage was knocked off the bed in the process, and the door opened. The boy struck her rabbit with the bat once as it hopped out, reports said. The victim said he followed her into the other room, punched her in the mouth, grabbed his coat, and ran off, reports said. He was arrested a few blocks away without incident.
It's rare that I read a marijuana story and I want the pot smoker to be locked up, but this is one of those stories. Dude, I don't care if the bongs smashed were $10,000 art glass hand-blown originals with Tommy Chong's signature on them. You do not hit people and kill animals, period. And Mom, what's up with letting the teen boyfriend and his bongs shack up with your teen daughter in your house in the first place?
Are you or is someone you know a marijuana smoker? Have you or is someone in your family been arrested for a marijuana violation? You need to know the truth about pot. NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, is the most comprehensive source of information regarding marijuana and its effects on health, as well as legal issues. NORML even offers a database of lawyers specializing in cannabis in your area. NORML, the nation's largest and most successful marijuana law reform organization, has spent decades gathering the knowledge and science on everything related to cannabis. NORML is the best resource to find out the truth about marijuana, connect with a lawyer in your area, or help find an end to prohibition. Information is available at normal.org, that's NORML.org, or toll free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws is the largest grassroots drug law reform organization in America. So every Monday we visit with the activists in drug law reform who are fighting for our freedom. Get motivated to get it regulated. Join us in some political activism today. You can start by visiting norml.org. Like I was saying last week here at the Daily Audio Stash, we've got state legislatures that are going into session, and that means there's going to be all sorts of bills that we're going to have to tell you about, and you're going to get the latest news right here in our Daily Audio Stash. Our first alert here is for the state of Montana this week for Tuesday and Wednesday, and joining us here to discuss these meetings and these bills is Tom Dobear from Montana Patients and Families United. You can find them at mtpfu.org. Tom, welcome back to the Stash.
Thanks, Russ. Great to be online with you, or on phone with you.
Yeah, all right. Now, Tuesday, tomorrow, you've got a very, very serious bill that you need to tell people about. Let's just tell them right off the bat.
Well, it's Senate Bill 212, and it's serious indeed. It'll be the first medical marijuana bill to be heard this year by the Senate Judiciary Committee. And it's a bill that's absolutely unprecedented and we believe probably unconstitutional even just on its face. The bill would call for blood testing of any registered patient or caregiver that law enforcement suspects is driving under the influence. And people who would fail the specified blood test would lose for the rest of their lives their privileges to be a registered patient under our law. And that's without regard of any kind for the nature of their medical condition or whether it might worsen or, you know, new medical conditions they might suffer later in their lives. If they fail the blood test specified under this bill, they'd be out of the medical marijuana picture here forever. Mm-hmm. And the reason this bill is so doubly negative to the program is that the THC blood plasma levels it specifies are known to be so low that many patients, even those who hadn't medicated for a day or even several days at the time of testing, would be likely to fail this test.
Wow. And I don't suppose they're introducing similar bills to make it that if you get a DUI for alcohol or Percocet, that you can never use those again for the rest of your life.
Well, that's no, Russ, and that's exactly one of the ways we think this is flatly unconstitutional. You know, it would make sense, and it's already illegal to drive in Montana under the influence of medical marijuana. It would make sense to have a penalty that related to driving privileges, as we do for alcohol and other legal drugs. But to single out this sort of a penalty, only applying it to medical marijuana patients, is truly unprecedented. It's also remarkable in the sense when you think we've got only slightly fewer than 1,600 registered marijuana patients in Montana. Yet we know that literally tens of thousands of other Montanans on any given day are likely to be taking pain relievers, muscle relaxants, mood stabilizers, and a long list of other kinds of entirely legal and appropriate drugs that are known to potentially cause impaired driving, even when used as directed.
Yeah, it's strange how they continue to single out the users of medical cannabis in this way, unlike, you know, any other prescription drug. I mean, if you put it that way, I think people can easily understand, even people that aren't involved with medical marijuana can easily understand that this is, you know, discriminatory by nature and un-American at its heart.
Absolutely.
So there's a hearing on this bill. What do the people need to know to get involved?
Well, to get involved, what people need to do is call members of the Montana Senate and ideally focus on those who are members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And that information can be found on the Internet at the Montana Legislature's website. The phone number at which you can leave messages is 406-449-4800. And the message basically would be just very simple: please oppose Senate Bill 212. It's discriminatory and unfair.
Now, if folks want to head to Helena and go to the State House, is there a hearing? Is there a room number they need to know?
Yes, the hearing will begin at 9 in the morning tomorrow in room 303 of the Capitol Building, which is commonly known as the old Senate, old Supreme Court chambers. And those of us involved in Patients and Families United will be congregating on the ground floor of the Capitol under the rotunda starting around 7:30 in the morning tomorrow.
All right. So get involved and let the legislators there in Montana know that this kind of legislation is wrong. It's just, this would be so discriminatory to patients, it's hard to even believe it's being proposed. And if people are going to make the trip to Helena, they could possibly, you know, stay the night, because you've got another hearing the very next day on Wednesday, don't you?
Absolutely. A hugely important hearing to us, a positive hearing. It's one of our bills. Will be heard Wednesday afternoon by the House Human Services Committee. It's House Bill 73. It's one of several proposals we will be making this legislative session. It's the most modest of the proposals we've developed. It does only two basic things. It would allow nurse practitioners and physician's assistants to make medical marijuana recommendation in addition to physicians who are already authorized to do so. That's a huge benefit to patients throughout the more rural parts of Montana. And if you're familiar with Montana, you know that's most of the state.
Yeah.
who tend not to see doctors. An awful lot of Montana communities don't have physicians. And so the folks who deliver the day-to-day health care services to patients are the nurse practitioners and physician's assistants. Right now, patients need to drive sometimes several hundred miles one way to see a physician they've never seen before to even consider the possibility of medical marijuana. The other provision in House Bill 73 is that it would allow patients with permanent or terminal conditions to register with the health department for 3 years instead of having to go through the bureaucratic process and pay the fee every year as they do now. So it's a moderate, very common sense pair of improvements to our law to make things a little bit better for patients all over the state.
Well, that's excellent. Now, as you look forward into the rest of 2009 and beyond, what other changes or improvements would you like to see in the program and the law there?
Well, we've got another bill, much more ambitious bill, that's almost finished the writing phase. Will soon go into legal review at Legislative Council. That bill will make a host of we think, also common sense improvements, but they're much more likely to raise controversy. We are asking that our law change the number of plants and the amount of medicine that patients are allowed to possess. Right now, they can only have 6 plants and 1 ounce at a time. And because of the tremendous restriction of that, we know people who are on probation, for example, right now, for having had 12 sprouts that weren't even seedlings.
Hmm.
So we'd like to clarify that the 6-plant limit applies only to mature flowering plants, and the 1 ounce possession limit is ridiculous when you consider that the federal government's medical marijuana program gives patients on the order of 2 ounces per week. So we're proposing a possession limit similar to what the state of Washington's health department recently derived in its rulemaking process, and that would be 12 ounces that the patient could possess as well as 12 ounces that the patient's caregiver could possess. We're also proposing to make explicit protections we think our law already offers but that we know patients are having problems with, and that is to specify explicitly that being a patient and using medical marijuana under the terms of our law cannot be used as a reason to fire somebody or to reduce their child custody rights or to reduce their rent or tenure rights. Finally, we're planning to propose the addition of some medical conditions that are not included in our law, but for which we know the scientific documentation justification is thorough, and that would include diabetes, Alzheimer's, and post-traumatic stress disorder, as well as several other conditions that our law currently doesn't include.
Looks like it's going to be a full slate there for 2009 for Montana Patients and Families United. Check them out at mtpfu.org to get more information. And Tom Dobert is the, are you the executive director, Tom?
I'm the founder and director, yes.
Founder and director of Montana Patients and Families United joins us here from time to time on the Stash to let us know what's happening up in Big Sky Country. Thanks for joining us again, Tom, and good luck. And again, give them one more time the meeting information for tomorrow in case folks are going to Helena.
Well, the hearing tomorrow morning starts at 9. We'll be meeting on the ground floor of the Capitol building around 7:30 from then on. And on Wednesday afternoon, the positive hearing begins at 3, but we're going to be hosting a luncheon for everyone who comes starting at 11:30. And the best thing for people who want to come who aren't already on our e-list would be to email us at info@mtpfu.org. And that would be a way of alerting us that you're planning to come, as well as getting on our e-list so you can stay in closer touch with everything we're doing.
And we'll put links there up on our Stash blog as well at stash.normal.org. Check out the post for today's podcast, and you'll find all those links that you need. Hey, Tom, thank you so much, and good luck for tomorrow.
Thank you, Russ.
Hello, I'm Casper Leach, host of Time for Him. When our politicians passed the Marijuana Tax Act in 1937, the citizens of the United States had no idea that a new civil war had begun. now, after more than 7 decades of this war's escalation and spending well over $1 trillion of taxpayers' money, the result has been an arrest record of more than 37 million brothers and sisters for nonviolent drug offenses. Every year, we choose to continue this war. We do so at the cost of well over $69 billion. Add to this, we are building prisons faster than we are building schools. In fact, the prison industry is now one of the fastest growing industries in the United States. We must end this civil war. We can with your help. Please, join LEAP, the law enforcement against prohibition, and become part of the solution to ending the war on drugs. Go to leap.cc and find out how to become a member.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. For today's Blues Monday musical break, I bring you the legendary harmonica man, Billy Boy Arnold. Billy Boy was a key player in the development of both Chicago blues and early rock and roll. He got his first harmonica lessons from John Lee Williamson, the original Sonny Boy. Billy was an important member of the Bo Diddley Band and, later on, a star in his own right with his widely influential recordings for the VJ label made between 1955 and 1957. On this album, Back Where I Belong, from 1993, Billy Boy picks up the harp again to deliver his style of licks with signature wah-wah vibrato. The song is called Whiskey, Beer, and Reefer, a tribute to the working blues musician's favorite ways to relax. Here you go, folks. It's Billy Boy Arnold with Whiskey, Beer, and Reefer.
I've been looking for you, baby. I've been looking for you all day long. I've been looking for you, baby. I've been looking for you all day long. One thing I wanna know, baby. Why you don't never stay around? Whiskey, beer, reefer.